It's 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
And that's right, you're back on 3CR Community Radio with me, Mercedes, and Jake back in the studio.
Back in the studio after all these months away, mate.
Yeah, it's good to have you back and to be sitting here across the panel with you.
Yeah, it's good to be back, I gotta say, and what a week to be back on.
Oh, I feel like it's always those weeks. But yeah, big ups to James with another great In Your Face program. You're tuned to Community Radio 3CR on 855 AM. Or at all the W's at 3cr.org.au.
Or through your Preston ceiling fan, your state-of-the-art surveillance helicopter in the sky.
Hello up there.
And look, you gave a shout-out to James from Your Face, another great show, but I wanted to, as we came into the studio, as he was walking out and we were walking in, he was playing music from Rocky Horror, Damn It, Janet. And I thought, I feel like Brad and Janet. In a Rocky Horror show, or like Dorothy. I don't think we're in Kansas anymore.
It's
you know, I should tell folks that when Mercedes and I were texting each other this morning, ready for the show, the text I wrote, and I'm going to read it straight off my phone. I'm going to say, hey God, where is it? Here it is. Signal. It's one of those weeks where we could just list all the things we want to talk about and still need to cut it short.
Yeah, exactly. It does seem like, but every week kind of seems a bit like that. We were having a laugh the other week when we were talking about how we could just record the show really, really fast and then just slow it down.
That's right. Get all you podcast listeners to listen to it at 1/3 speed so that it actually takes half an hour.
That's right. And also, just before we walked into the studio, we were in the courtyard, and big shout out to Tilda from Slacker Radio and Rachel and the Breakfasters for the awards at the CBAA Awards.
Yeah, Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big ups for 3CR and those folks for everything they do.
Absolutely. And Tilda will be Slacker Radio immediately following us today.
That's right.
Yeah, so stay tuned.
Indeed. So, I mean, I guess we're going to have to give a bit of a. It's been again one of those weeks.
It's been one of those weeks. I mean, part of me just wants to do a whole half hour show on what's happening in Venezuela.
Yeah.
At the moment, but we can't because there's so much happening everywhere else.
Yeah.
But in Venezuela, they're taking out ships, left, right, and centre. Venezuela is saying that there's a. CIA-linked mercenaries caught during a false flag attack. Venezuela's quote, report it has captured a mercenary group with direct information from the US intelligence agency CIA being able to determine that a false flag attack is underway from waters bordering Trinidad and Tobago or from Trinidad or Venezuelan territory itself. This planned attack perfectly evokes the provocation of the battleship Maine and the Gulf of Tonkin, which gave rise to the war against Spain to seize Cuba in 1898 and allowed the US Congress to authorize involvement in eternal war against Vietnam in 64, from which they emerged defeated by the Vietnamese people. And then goes on to accuse the Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago, Kamala Persad Bissur, as acting as a military subordinate of US hegemonic interests. But it's looking like it's looking, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but it's looking like it's coming on. You know, Trump has dared Congress to take its war powers seriously in Venezuela. Mm. And he said he bet that no one would stop me from lead attacks in Venezuela.
Yeah, it's just like bully tactics, and said that moving from sea, I mean, what there's already been
Five ships taken out that we're aware of.
That we're aware of. Yeah. Exactly. That's what the ones that we do hear about. And, yeah, it was only in Congress a couple of days ago that Trump has signalled that they're going to be moving to land.
To land. And saying, try and stop me.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable that this is where we're at right now. But not only that's where we're at, but the rest of the world is so where it's at that this is just a byline.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
And of course, I mean, the Israel has broken the ceasefire over 100 times.
Yeah, yeah.
But most recently with undertaking airstrikes, killing over 100 Palestinians within the space of 24 hours. And with impunity.
With impunity.
Yeah.
And it just keeps going on and on and on. And it's hard to say anything because as much as the bullshit we know it is, the partial ceasefire or the ceasefire in hours-long packages that Israel's allowing to happen. Sorry, you have to excuse my voice. I've been crook all week. It still means that there are less. Well, we just killed 100 Palestinians. Okay, but you've got to remember that 2 months ago it would have been 500.
Yeah, but, you know, but that's where we're at, you know?
That's where we're at.
It's just, but, I mean, of course, that's not where 3CR listeners are at and us, of course. So this Sunday there will be a rally again at State Library at 12 o'clock. So get out, make sure you continue to show up and stay active.
Be there or be an arsehole.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's happening in Venezuela. Meanwhile, over in our neck of the woods, we've had, what is it, not ASEAN, I keep saying ASEAN, APEC.
APEC. Well, it's ASEAN and APEC. Yeah, one after the other. Yeah.
It's the same people. Now, a whole, and we'll get on to Trump and Xi Jinping meeting soon, but he also met with South Korea.
Yes.
The South Korean president. And announced that South Korean company Hanwha is going to be putting $150 billion or something strange like that into building U.S. submarine facilities in Philadelphia.
Yes, at the Philadelphia Yards.
The Philly Yards.
Yeah.
And that they're going to be building nuclear submarines. And that's going to somehow help Australia get some AUKUS submarines because
So Trump's given, the US has given South Korea the green light to have nuclear powered submarines. And Hanwha, I think it was last year.
So I got to say that somehow AUKUS just, I feel we're just not that special anymore. Yeah, sorry.
No, that's Albanese. He'll be crying to his little Toto, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think it was last year, Hanwha, which is a South Korean multinational that, of course, has their facility down at Lara and next to Avalon Airport, building the and they've got the contract for the Redback Infantry Fighting Vehicles, which many listeners will know, they're the company that signed the deal with Elbit Systems.
Yes.
For the turret system. So Hanwha last year, I think, purchased the Philadelphia Yards.
Yep.
And Trump's just given the green light. The US has just given the green light for South Korea to have to get nuclear-powered subs.
Yeah.
Much the same. And as we've been saying on a Friday rave, I mean, Jake, you've been saying it since AUKUS was established, but we're never going to get these submarines. And we know that the US shipbuilding capability is so far up shit creek that Australia aren't going to get our subs, you know.
No.
I mean, not that we're complaining about that, but I think the implications of... we know that AUKUS was sort of this... moonlighting as nuclear subs in order to put through a raft of policy and legislation, and including that sharing of information and research intelligence of national security between the three AUKUS amigos.
Yep.
And I guess, you know, this is another question. It was like, okay, so now this capability is being expended to South Korea as well. They're going to build them in the US,
yep.
which is another you know, suggests that, I mean, there are some pundits that are saying that it will help AUKUS because it'll push along the shipbuilding capabilities.
Oh, but they're the same pundits who, no matter what, you know, it's looking like it's going to be a nice day tomorrow. Oh, that'll help AUKUS.
Yeah.
Everything's going to help AUKUS. This is people like Mike Pizzello you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the one in particular who I was kind of thinking about. But I guess in terms of that, if like, you know, as you put out a pamphlet about AUKUS a little while ago, which is on the Renegade Activist website, which I think really clearly outlines all of those policy objectives of AUKUS and that were already implemented. And I guess one of the things here is if that network of nuclear-powered subs is being expanded, then everything that they've been saying that is the justification under national security, what does that mean? And now I'm not saying this in terms of being like, oh no, you know, they can't have our secrets too. I'm just saying this to kind of highlight how bullshit it is.
It is. It's crazy, isn't it? And, you know, South Korea, of course, is that much closer to China. For people who don't understand the geography, South Korea is just across the on the bottom of the Korean Peninsula, is just across the Yellow Sea from mainland China, sits between mainland China and Japan, in fact. So any submarines built in South Korea that are actually going to be based in South Korea or be based in Okinawa in Japan are going to be a lot more important to the US containment of China than Australian submarines coming out of Garden Island in WA, or US submarines based in Garden Island.
Well, that's a thing. And so I wonder if also these policies means that it's just having another port at which US subs can be.
Yeah, and then also that status of forces agreements, what would that mean for South Korean nuclear submarines to be based
out of Garden Island?
Out of Garden Island. Or not be based there, because why would they be?
To be able to pull up.
To be able to pull up and, you know, stop it.
Get a pie from the servo.
Yeah, stop it, you know, Garden Island. The brass monkey pub down there is quite it's quite good. I can imagine them putting on some soju, particularly for the South Koreans. But
I wouldn't complain about that, delicious.
But that's an aside. What does this mean? And while, you know, all the discussion we had about the need for nuclear submarines in Australia, and whether we shouldn't, what it meant for the arms control treaties and nuclear proliferation treaties and all the rest of them, now South Korea's just gone, yep, South Korea can have them too.
Yeah. Go on. Why not?
Yeah. And to not want to sound like I'm using the old domino theory argument against them. Trump has also said that Japan's going to get its Sidewinder and RDAM missiles this week for its F-35. How soon before Japan is given access to US ports?
Yeah, and I guess in terms of the containment strategy, do you think that that the US is still using a containment strategy with China? It's still sort of based on this idea that, despite Trump meeting with Xi Jinping this week,
and when you look at the press, you know, geez, we've got so much to talk about. Yeah. Trump and Xi Jinping. Trump's gone in and said we're going to have nuclear tests again, immediately before walking into. You know, you go into a peace meeting. If I go into a peace meeting with you, dear listener, because of some spat we're having about purchasing power, and immediately before I walk in the door, I make an announcement saying, you know what? Yeah, I'm going in for a peace talk, but I'm going to buy myself a new AR-15 or an MK or something, you know? I mean, it's bullshit. Now, they've claimed they've got this supply chain thing. What do you tell us about critical minerals and supply chains in China?
So in April, part of China put a ban on export of certain rare earth and critical minerals. There were seven. I'm not going to read them out. You can jump on your preferred search engine in browser to have a look at that, mainly because I can't actually pronounce most of them. And then this week, there was an additional five of the rare earth minerals that we're going to put on the ban. So this not only included the minerals themselves, but also the research and the information about the technology for processing.
Right.
So part of the what came out of US and Xi Jinping meeting was that there's going to be a trade. They're going to hold off for a year, basically. Mm. So the tariffs that the US have on Chinese imports have reduced from 57% to 47%.
Right.
I think there's an agreement around soybeans. I'm not totally across that, but yep. I'm sure that's a big sticking point. But also that the five minerals that were going to start being enforced, that ban, there's no longer. And I think there's going to be an easing up of supply chain of information and processed critical minerals.
Right.
As what we understand, or what I understand, of where it's at. So details about that framework or what that looks like haven't been totally released, except for comments, and just, what that actually looks like, what that agreement looks like. But in the interim, at APEC, I know that the US has also signed a trade deal with Malaysia.
Yep.
And I think the critical minerals are, and rare earths are making up a big part of that. And I think it would be also worth mentioning that just, a couple of days ago, Lynas.
Mm-hmm.
So Lynas operate Mount Weld rare earth mine, which is
just outside of Laverton in Western Australia, my old stomping ground.
That's right. And so they have they just opened a processing facility mm-hmm. there at Mount Weld, but also a large part of what comes out of Mount Weld. Lynas own a processing facility and operate a processing facility in Malaysia
yep.
for light rare earth. So just 2 days ago, Lynas Malaysia have announced that they'll be extending that processing facility
yep.
To the tune of about $180 million to process heavy rare earths.
Right.
And so that will make that facility the largest processing
plant outside of China.
Outside of China. Yeah. And so the crossover of the light rare earths and the heavy rare earths that will be processed there, there is quite a bit of crossover with the minerals that China have put a ban to the US on.
Sure. And a big part of that, I think, going into a good friend of ours just before we went on the show said, when you're talking about critical minerals, you've also got to talk about the environmental destruction.
Yes.
And I think we need to raise, too, that this reopening of the plant in an expansion of the plant in Malaysia, which comes a couple of years maybe after Malaysia closed it down because of environmental issues associated with it, and then Australia reduced its environmental conditions so that Lynas could continue doing the work here, but now there are the new environmental laws going through Parliament at the moment.
Mm.
Excuse me. And it's very unlikely. Well, no, bullshit. They get away with whatever they want to get away with for national defence.
Yeah.
But that'd be why they've gone back to Malaysia. The US deal with Malaysia
mm-hmm.
and also the pending environmental laws sitting before Parliament at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I think, just to, in response to our friend and dear listener who raised that when we spoke about critical minerals last week, that we didn't talk about the environmental aspect. I mean, we know what the last mining boom did to country. We know
yeah.
the policies that were put in for land grabs from the intervention and what the destruction means. But I think I just want to read out now, this information, these figures that I'm quickly going to read out
yep.
Just to give you an idea of, how much rare earth is, what yield is required to get that. So a F-35 requires about 400 kilos of rare earth elements. The Virginia class sub, which is the ones that we'll never get,
yep.
Needs over 4 tons per submarine.
Wow.
So to get the three subs, if Australia, you know, whatever. That's
the ones that are going to be based here.
The ones that are going to be based
here. Whether they're
here.
Made here and which flag they've got on their ass.
Yeah, so over 4 tonnes. So for every tonne of rare earth produced, the mining process yields about 13 kilos of dust, 9,600 to 12,000 cubic metres of waste gas, 75 cubic metres of wastewater. And that's just not wastewater. This is, you know, the sulfur that's involved in the processing that then gets put into leaching ponds and then just sits on the ground. And one ton of radioactive residue. So the processing of rare earths through leaching ponds contaminates the air, water, and the earth.
And our souls, my friend, and our souls.
And so for every ton of rare earth that is extracted and processed, there's about 2,000 tons of toxic waste.
Wow. And how many tons for a submarine, did you say?
Just over four.
4 tons.
Yeah.
So 8,000 tons of toxic waste.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Probably still, I mean, it's outrageous.
Well, and I think
and I'm not
also
being entirely flippant when I'm saying still a lot better than just one of these when they let off a nuclear weapon.
Well, yeah, but I think it's also, it would be remiss not to mention that the electricity and the power, so gallium, it's about, 47 kilos of aluminium for every gram of gallium.
Right.
But these are
so that's 47,000 to one.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And so they're really energy intensive. And so Arafura Resources, which was one of the projects that Albanese, they're giving another 100 or so million to, to push. They're a neodymium and praseodymium mine. You've heard a lot about them on the show.
Yep.
But they have a, now the name of the company, but they've just earlier this year signed a deal for natural gas with the company that is fracking the Beetaloo Basin. So,
whoa, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've got that here somewhere and I can't remember what the name of the, but in terms of how they're going to get the gas to the natural gas to operate this mining facility is from fracking the Beetaloo Basin.
From fracking
the
basin.
So the downstream environmental impacts are just immense and almost, not to mention the poisoning of groundwater, the drawing of groundwater for the leaching ponds.
Yeah, and look, and also when we, it just struck me that when we say that it's 47 kilos for a gram, 47 kilos of aluminium to a gram of gallium, that 47 kilos of aluminium, it's like how many kilos of earth?
Yeah.
How many tons of earth were moved to get that 47 kilos of aluminium? So gallium is a byproduct or a subproduct, I guess you'd more fittingly call it, from aluminium, which is so destructive in its own right.
Mm.
Like we don't need to, even before any of us heard of gallium last year.
Yeah.
Or a couple of years ago for some, a few years ago for some of us, like yourself. There's enough reason to stop aluminium processing because of, you know, not only its destructiveness, but where it's always happened on First Nations people's land in WA and Queensland.
Yeah.
And the environmental destruction that happened around the Gulf of Carpentaria with the Weeper project for aluminium was devastating.
Yeah.
And so gallium or no aluminium needs to be stopped, but particularly because of the gallium.
Yeah, but it's all in the name of national security. So
it's all in the name of national security. Now,
A
couple of minutes, a declassified thing.
Yeah.
There was just we're talking about this now, but look, I'm just going to give a straight out plug for a website called Declassified Australia, declassifiedaus.org, run by a bloke called Peter Cronu, who some of you may know from his work on Four Corners and a whole lot of other.
And I think it was on Thursday Brekkie just the other day.
Was he?
Yeah.
Hey, good on you, Pete. I should give him a call. But anyway, they're leading this week about the plans to reintroduce D notices. Defence notices to stop people being able to talk about national security issues, defence issues, and these D notices will, of course, be whatever the Department of Defence says they'll be. And he goes through the history of them in Australia and talks about, and I mentioned that, what's that prick's name? Mike Pizzullo.
Oh, yeah, he's
earlier. He sticks his head up everywhere, doesn't he? Sticks his head up everywhere like an angry bloody zit. He just, you keep popping the thing and it just sticks up somewhere else. Mike Pizzullo. G'day, Mike. Has been pushing this and pushing this and pushing this to reintroduce the idea of having Australian journalists be stopped in reporting on defence matters. And this comes straight after the US Department of War, the Pentagon, have tried to do a deal with journalists to say they needed to get everything approved. And just every journalist, every media organisation there apart from one.
Which was an ultra-conservative one, wasn't it?
It's basically run by the Pentagon.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Told them to get stuffed and walked out and handed in their press cards. And then you find out that Peter Grester, remember Peter Grester? Peter Grester was a bloke who was in jail in Egypt for 400 days. Big campaigns to let him out, the Australian government moved heaven and earth to get him out in a way they didn't do for, I don't know who, Julian Assange. But then
right.
Peter Grester, and being referred to as Professor Grester, was one of the people, one of the strongest voices, as a journalist who was imprisoned himself, saying that Julian Assange was not a journalist. And he deserves to rot in Belmarsh. Now, after the Australian government changed and Julian got out, Grester changed his tune, of course, because these slimy, mud-raking excuses for journalists will always change their tune when the person paying their pocket changes, all right? But he's now formed a mob, and he's had a mob for a while, and that's at odds with the Media and Entertainment Alliance, the Journos Union, MIA, and with a new mob called Responsible Journalist Australia or Journalist Association of Australia, actually suggesting that Australian journalists be, what's the word he's using, designated as journalists by the government in order to be able to report on defence matters.
What any self-respecting journalist would say that that's a good idea? I mean, he's not, clearly, but...
Well, he's a self-respecting journalist, but he's the only person that does respect him. and this is happening now. These talks are ongoing, and we're talking about April 24 committee meetings. We're talking about this stuff coming out now. So people should be aware that the Australian government is working very closely with the British government to put more limits on press freedom. And this is not going to be for the Murdoch press. This is going to be for community radio, for alternative media, for social media. So keep your eye on this happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And also I think, you know, we don't have time to get into it now. Oh, we really don't. But maybe we'll chat more next week about how this fits into the AUKUS framework as well.